Thank you, Eleni. You know, my wife, and I have permission to tell this, by the way. My wife gives me a hard time because every sermon that I preach, I start it the exact same way, and she can say it verbatim. But I say, good morning. Welcome to Rockville Christian Church. We're glad you're here to worship with us and study with us today. If you're new here, welcome. We're super glad you're here. My name is Kevin, and I have the privilege of being one of the pastors here on staff, and I have the privilege of getting to share with you this morning. And then I would say the Bible text. And so this morning we're going to be in the book of Mark, chapter 8. So if you want to go ahead and turn there, we're going to be in verse 27 through 30. And I do this on purpose. It was instilled in me in Bible college that you should tell who you are for new people to help to get to know you, especially if they're a guest. So I use titles to describe myself. You know, it's kind of interesting how we use titles to describe ourselves. If asked to describe myself, I'd immediately jump to my name, that I'm a pastor, that I'm a husband, that I'm a father. And if asked to describe someone else, I would do the exact same thing. I would use titles to describe them. I don't know what it is about titles, but it's how we describe ourselves. In fact, in today, Mark chapter 8, we're going to see a moment where Jesus asks us a similar question. We're going to see in today's text, Jesus asks, who do the people say that I am? Essentially, he's asking, what do the people say my title is? And as I said earlier, I find it's really interesting that we use titles to describe who we are. You see, our titles, they really begin to tell our stories. So with me, like I said, I use my name. My name is Kevin, that I'm a husband, and that I am a father. And so immediately, people in this room start to connect with those titles. If you're a father, you're a dad, raise your hand. Yeah, and so immediately, a bunch of you in this room, you start to connect to that title. And we start to compartmentalize in who people are based off of their titles. So this morning, I don't know what your title is. You can have multiple titles, but I imagine that your title, it tells your story. For some of you, you're a dad. For some of you in this room, you are a mom. And for some of you, in that title, it tells your story. For some of you, that's a great story. Maybe that's a brand new story. For some of you, that's a story of loss. It's a story of what was supposed to be, but it didn't turn out the way you'd planned it. For some of you in this room, your title is husband. For some of you, your title is wife. Maybe your title is sister. Maybe your title is brother. Maybe the title that you hold on to dearly is son or daughter. But our titles, they tell our stories. Whether your title is married or whether your title is single, I guarantee that if your title is separated or divorced or widowed, that you have a title that tells part of your story. Maybe your title is employed or unemployed. Maybe your title is accountant. Maybe your title is teacher or doctor or nurse or stay-at-home mom. But again, whatever your titles are, they tell your story. Maybe you look at your life and say, man, I'm a dropout. Or maybe you look at your life and say, I'm a graduate. Maybe your title is athlete. Maybe your title is coach. Maybe in high school, your title was beast. How many of you guys had that title? I see some middle school kids raising their hand, no adults. Maybe your title was bench warmer. How many had that title? Yeah, we got more of those. Maybe you're like me, and we share this title. Maybe you're an introvert. Or maybe you're more like my wife, whose title is extrovert. Maybe your title is lover. Maybe there's a certain cemetery you drive by because you've lost someone. Maybe you're a survivor and you face cancer. Or maybe you've lost something so dear that you can't even find the words to describe it, and so you're sad. But our titles in these moments, they tell our stories. I don't know if your title is saint. I don't know if your title is sinner. But I guarantee something we all have in common is that our titles tell our stories. You see, Jesus has this moment with the disciples in Mark chapter 8, starting verse 27, if you want to look at it. It says, Jesus and his disciples went to the village around Caesarea Philippi, On the way, he asked them, "Who do the people say that I am?" He says, "Who do the people say I am?" Essentially, what titles do the people say I have? You see, here's the deal. Jesus asked them what other people are saying, and the disciples answered what other people think. Well, some say you're John the Baptist. Well, some say you're Elijah. Some say that you're a prophet. And then Jesus takes this moment. In verse 29, look at it. "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say that I am?" And I think in this moment, the title that they're going to answer tells a story. You see, God goes by a lot of different names, especially in the Old Testament. There's a lot of proper names for God in the Old Testament. But there are a lot of different names used to help tell who he was and to tell his story. And I think in that moment, when Jesus looks at these men and Jesus asks them, "Who do you say that I am?" I want to press pause here this morning. I want to picture these 12 guys in this rural setting where Jesus has just asked them, "Who do they think he is?" And I want to freeze this moment, if you'll let me. And I want to crawl inside, and I want to dig in, and I wonder what the mind of Jesus is thinking. I wonder what they're going to call me. I wonder if Jesus wonders what the disciples' response to him asking that is going to be. Are they going to call me by the title that I originally started with? The very first title I had, that I was Jehovah, that I was Yahweh. In the book of Genesis, you find it in chapter 2, when God reveals himself in creation, you see this God who brought everything into existence out of nothing. He forms mountains and oceans and animals and man, and he calls himself Jehovah. And you see this name Jehovah, it was so sacred that God's people would only use these four letters right there, YHWH. In the scholarly world, we call these four letters the Tetragrammaton. And essentially what it means is his name is so holy that we've lost the ability even to know how to pronounce it. You see, God's people found his name Jehovah so holy that they wouldn't even write the whole thing down. For me to be able to stand up here this morning and to say Jehovah, whoo, you wouldn't have done that. The people of God were so concerned with the text like Exodus chapter 20 that they didn't want to misuse God's name, that they respected it so much, that they were so careful about even saying his name. His name was so special, so sacred, that they wouldn't speak it, and if they had to write it down, they would only write those four letters. This name really, it gets unpacked with Moses. How many of you guys have heard about Moses? Like four of us. How many of you guys have heard about Moses? Yeah. Moses is being called by God to go and lead God's people out of Egypt. God's people were slaves and they were being held captives by the Egyptian. And God calls Moses to rescue his people and tell the Egyptians that I am has sent you. His name, this name is Jehovah, is so rich. It means that I am with you, that I am, that I was, and I'm always going to be. I am omnipresent. I am everywhere and I know everything. All things were built by me and everything is sustained in me. I am, God says. I am Jehovah. I am Yahweh. God is revealed in his name. And I wonder if Jesus looks at his disciples and go, will they call me Jehovah? Or maybe Jesus wonders if our titles tell our stories, will they call me by a different name? Maybe they'll call me Jehovah Jireh. As Jesus looks around at his disciples and he asks, who do you say I am? I wonder if Jesus wonders if they're going to call me Jehovah Jireh. Because I remember that day that Abraham climbed up Mount Moriah, and I remember that he took his only begotten son, that he took Isaac on top of this mountain. How many of you guys remember this story? Yeah. And Abraham, he ties his son up and he puts him up on the altar and he prepares to sacrifice him. And he raises his knife. And God says, stop! I've given you a ram to take his place. I've given you something to provide for you. Let the boy go. And in that moment, Abraham says, your name is Jehovah Jireh. Because what we needed is a sacrifice and you provided it. Your name is, I am the provider. And I wonder if Jesus, in this moment, he looks at the disciples and goes, I wonder if they know who I am. Do you know who I am? Who do you say that I am? I wonder if Jesus looks at them and asks, do they even know that I'm Jehovah Mikadikim? This is a moment where God wanted to be near his people, but because of kind of like us in this room, to live in holiness is a constant work. It's a constant struggle. It's a lot of effort. And God sees that in us. And God sees that in his people. And God sees that in his disciples. And he says, you can't even find a way to make yourself holy. You can't. I, God, am holy. And so God says, I will make you holy because it's impossible for you to do it on your own. So he says, I am Jehovah Mikdashim. I am the one who makes you holy. And he provided a way. He provided a way in the Old Testament to make his people holy through sacrifices and through burnt offerings because they couldn't do it themselves. And so now these guys in the book of Mark, they're sitting around Jesus, and we push pause. And I wonder if Jesus in this moment wonders if the disciples will call him Jehovah Mikdashim. Do they understand who I am? Do they understand it is I who makes them holy? Do they know who I am? Or maybe, just maybe, they'll call me Jehovah Nissi. This is a rich one. This is the moment in the book of Exodus where Israel is at war with the Amalekites. And Moses, he's standing on top of this hill, and he has his arms lifted up to God, and he cries out to God, and all of a sudden, with his arms up in the air, the battle starts to swing in favor of the Israelites. And as he's crying out in prayer, with his arms lifted up, Israel is winning. And all of a sudden, Moses' arms start to get tired and weary, and he drops his arms down. And all of a sudden, the battle turns against the Israelites, and the Amalekites start winning. So Moses, he shoves his arms back into the air, and the Israelites start winning. But then again, his arms get weary until Hur and Aaron get on each side of Moses, and they lift his arms up for the remainder of the battle until the Israelites have destroyed the Amalekites. And in that moment, Moses says, you are Jehovah Nissi. You are our banner. You are the one who carries us in battle. Through your outstretched arms, we have won. We have a victory. And I wonder if Jesus ever looked at them and thought, do you realize that I am Jehovah Nissi? That I am your banner? Who do you say that I am? Do you even know who I am? Or maybe he looked at them and wondered, do you know that I'm Jehovah Rapha? The Israelites were wandering through the desert, and they were thirsty, and they were dehydrated. And they came upon these waters, the waters of Marah. And the Israelites see this, and they just flood into the waters because they're so thirsty, they're so dehydrated, and they just start drinking this water. And the water that they're drinking is bitter. It's bad. It's going to kill them. And so they realize that they can't drink this, but they're in the desert, and they're going to die, and they're terrified. Until finally, God tells Moses to go grab this tree and throw it into the water. So Moses goes, and he throws his tree in the water, and all of a sudden, this bitterness that was killing them, this bitterness that would have eaten them alive from the inside out, has now turned sweet because of a tree. Something that was meant to be destructive has now been made sweet. And I wonder if in that moment the disciples know that they are talking to Jehovah Rapha, the God who heals, the God who can quench a thirst that they can't quench on their own, the God who can take what was bitter and make it sweet. Or I wonder if in that moment Jesus wonders, will they call me Jehovah Roy? David says, you are my shepherd, not just a shepherd, but my personal shepherd. Do they realize that in that moment that they are sitting there with Jehovah Roy? Did the disciples understand that Jesus was Jehovah Sabaoth? And this is probably one of my favorite ones. When you look at the Old Testament, my favorite story, there's this moment, where God is feeding the prophet Elisha inside information. And there's this enemy king who wants to destroy the Israelites. And so every day, this enemy king, he would position his army around Israel, preparing to destroy them. But before he could, Elisha would go to the Israelite king and tell them what was going to happen so that the Israelites could move so they wouldn't be attacked. And the enemy king, he is so upset at this point. He says, is there a spy in our midst? Is there a traitor among us? Turns out there's no spy, but there's a prophet that's feeding the Israelites inside information. So the king goes, okay, rally thousands of troops, thousands of horses, thousands of chariots, and they surround this small town that Elisha is living in. And the next morning, Elisha and his servant, they walk out. Oh, no. But Elisha says, do you not understand that we have Jehovah Sabaoth on our side? And all of a sudden, thousands upon thousands, 10,000 upon 10,000 angels are completely surrounding this army. Jehovah Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts, is on our side. This is the same word that's used in the story of David and Goliath. How many of you guys know that story? He says, you come at me with a sword and shield, but I come at you in the name of Jehovah Sabaoth. Do you know who he is? Or maybe Jesus in this moment wonders if the disciples will call him Jehovah Shalom. Everyone who has ever encountered God in the Old Testament, they fell down as if they were dead. Isaiah says, "Woe to me, I am ruined." Moses, when he talked with God on top of that mountain, he looked like he had gone through some type of nuclear treatment. He came down and he was literally glowing. A face-to-face experience with God was a terrifying thing. But there's another story that's similar. Gideon, he's this guy who's the least of his family. He's the least of Israel. He's a nobody. He's a peon. And God goes to him and tells him, "You are going to defeat the Midianites." And Gideon goes, "No, I'm not." And God says, "Yes, you are." And Gideon goes, "Well, then you're going to have to show me a sign." So this angel takes a staff, hits a rock, boom, fire burst up out of the stone and engulfs the sacrifice. And Gideon's sitting there like, he's terrified, right? But the angel says, "Don't be terrified. I'm not coming to bring you terror. I am Jehovah Shalom. I have come to bring you peace. If I am here, you are okay." And I wonder if the disciples understood who they were talking to. Or maybe Jehovah Shema. The very last verse in the book of Ezekiel is God gives them the land and the city. They've been on this long journey. They've been exiled in Babylon, and they've come back. And God tells them the name of the city is just given them there. I am there. I'm going to set my presence up with you. I'm going to be dwelling with you. So just name the city, I am there. I am there because my name is Jehovah Shema, because I won't leave you or abandon you. And I wonder if in that moment they realized they were talking to Jehovah Shema. Or I wonder if Jesus thought they might call him Jehovah Tzidiku. Because he is our righteousness. He is the one the prophet Jeremiah says a branch will come from David. A son of David will come and he will make all things right. Do they realize what they are powerless to do? Powerless to accomplish on their own. Do they realize that they don't have to do it on their own? That his name is Jehovah Tzidiku. That he is the one that makes us righteous. You do not do that. God does. I am your righteousness. And I wonder if they understood who they were talking to. And so Jesus, he looks at the disciples that are sitting around him. And he asks Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" Look at verse 29. Peter answered, "You are the Christ." Some of your translations probably say Messiah. It's the same thing. Look at this word. It's a big word. The impact of this word is huge. You see, Jesus Christ is not his name. It's not like if I were to pull out my license right now, it'd say Kevin Thomas Roach. Jesus would not fill out his tax form by writing Jesus Christ on it. Jesus is not his name. It's his title. He is the one Abraham said was coming. He is the one whom all major and minor prophecies were talking about. He is the one we've all been waiting for. He is the anointed one. He is the Christ. And in this moment, he looks at Peter and he asks, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter answers, "You are the Christ. You are the Son of God. You are the anointed one. You are the Messiah." And in this moment, his title tells a story. Do you understand who he is? Church, do you understand who he is? Because remember, our titles, they tell our story. It's interesting, as you look back at the names that I just gave you, of all the proper names of God in the Old Testament, and you think about who Jesus is and what he has accomplished, and you realize in John chapter 8, verse 58, where he is talking to the religious teachers, and he says, "Before Abraham was born, I am." And in that moment, the religious leaders wanted to kill him because he has just made it abundantly clear that he is claiming to be God. He pulls that phrase going all the way back to Genesis, going all the way back to Exodus. He wants everyone to make no mistake that I am the promised one. Looking back at all those names, he is Jehovah Jireh. He is the one who provides, just like with Abraham and Isaac when they needed a sacrifice, God provided. And when we need a sacrifice, God provided Jesus for us, and he sent him to the cross to die so that we may have life in him. That he is Jehovah Mikdashim. We don't have to get our act together before we can come before God. Jesus has already done that. You don't have to do it yourself. We can come to this place full of all of our ugliness, all of our sin, because we have been made right because of him. He is Jehovah Mikdashim, the one who sanctifies us. That Jesus is Jehovah Nisi, that he is our banner, and then he is fighting our battles for us with outstretched arms. that Jesus is Jehovah Rapha, that he is the Lord who heals, that he is the one who shows up and heals our pain, that he is Jehovah Roi, that he is our shepherd, that he is Jehovah Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts, that Jesus will rule over every power, that when he died and rose from the grave, he defeated Satan, that he has the power over death, that he rules over angels, and that he rules over every power of darkness, that he has conquered all, and that we can call upon God when we are going through hard times, because he is the Lord of hosts, and that he has power over everything. That Jesus is Jehovah Shalom, that because of him, we have peace with God through Jesus Christ. That Jesus is Jehovah Shema, and that he promises a city, Emmanuel, God with us. That Jesus will be present with us in that city, it's heaven, and we will dwell with him for eternity. Jesus is Jehovah Tzedekiah, the Lord our righteousness, that Jesus is the one through his blood we have been made righteous. And in this moment, Jesus looks at these men and asks, do you know who I am? Who do you say that I am? His name is Jesus, and he is the Christ. And remember, our titles tell our story. And in this moment, he says his name is Christ. That name is very important. And the truth of the matter is, we will all come to terms with who he is one way or the other. There will come a day when he returns and you either know who he is or you don't. That day will come, and this morning we are presenting this question, and he is in this room and he's peering into every single eye in this room asking, who do you say I am? Church, who do you say that he is? Because he is Jehovah Jireh, he is Jehovah Mikdashim and Nisi and Rapha and Roi and Sabaoth and Shalom and Shema and Tzedekiah. He is the Christ, he is the Messiah, he is the Anointed One. He's not just a good guy, he's not just a good teacher, he's not just a prophet, he's not just someone that we come here on a Sunday morning so we can feel good about ourselves. He is the Christ, he is the Lord of Lords, and he is the King of Kings. And remember, our titles, they tell our story. We've established what his title is. And I wonder what your title will be. It will be this moment where we stand before the Father. And I'm just curious what your title will be. Because your title will tell your story. Employed or unemployed won't matter. Married or single won't matter. Beast or bench warmer, they won't matter. As you stand before Yahweh, as you stand before Jehovah, what will your title be? I pray that God looks at you and says your title is redeemed. That you can say, this is my title. Because of your son and his sacrifice, because of nothing that I did on my own, because of what you did on that cross, because of Jesus, I am redeemed. No failure, no divorce, no separation, no unemployment, no loss of life. None of those titles will tell our story. The only title that tells our story is the one that I hold most dear. That I am redeemed. And that my title will tell my story. This morning, I leave you with two simple questions. Who do you say that he is? And will you allow your title to tell your story? This morning, we're asking you that question. And to answer that question, for some of you, that means coming forward and giving your life to Christ for the very first time in baptism. For some of you, that mean coming down and surrendering your life to him. For some of you, it may mean coming down and asking for prayer. For some of you, it may mean coming down and working through some of these decisions. If you have a decision that needs to be made, we invite you to come down at this time. Will you stand?